All right, don't do that ho, ho, ho thing you did last week. That was awful.
Okay, fine. Join us on December 3rd for the second annual Heritage Radio Network Holiday Gala Fundraiser at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens. For information and tickets, visit heritageradionetwork.org/gala. And this weekend, join me at the Miami Book Fair, where I'll be on a panel Sunday, November 18th at 3 p.m., discussing my book, Chefs, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. For tickets and information, visit miamibookfair.com. Better?
So much better.
Gobble, gobble.
Andrew, please.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
I'm Massimo Bottura.
Hi, this is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs on Heritage Radio.
Like a vision. In front of me appears this giant basket of garlic bread with melty oozy mozzarella cheese. And I was like, holy shit, like this is amazing. And before I can even finish saying that, next to it gets dropped a bowl of piping hot spicy marinara sauce. And I said, holy shit, this is food people want to eat. This is food people want. This is the kind of food we need to fucking give people. They don't want fancy schmancy. Like, I'm not fancy schmancy. What am I doing trying to cook this food that's not me? Like, garlic bread is me. Chicken parm and steak fries is me. A spaghetti with fucking marinara sauce is me. And the whole trajectory changed that day. Everything changed that day.
That is Chef Christian Petroni of Fortina Restaurants in Westchester, Connecticut, and Brooklyn, and the recent co-winner of Food Network Star. Our guest today on Andrew Talks to Chefs. It's gonna take a prolonged arrangement of the senses
to make some sense of this. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. We've got a terrific guest today, Christian Petroni of Fortina Restaurants in Westchester, Connecticut, and Brooklyn. And many of you might also know him as the recent co-winner of Food Network Star.
I'm back.
Oh, sorry, Caitlin. Caitlin is back, everybody. How happy are we for Christian Petroni, Caitlin?
I'm so happy. Listen, can we just stop for a second?
Yeah.
Because you handed me a script this morning, which yes. I can't actually believe that you did. And I can't...
Are you actually...
Am I actually...
Yeah, because this is kind of meta because you actually are holding a script, but this is not the script.
I know, because I'm actually like cannot believe you handed me a script. First of all,
you have to explain. We usually don't have a script.
Yeah, we never have scripts.
I thought.
Yeah.
Because what often happens is
we ramble.
We start doing this.
Yeah.
We ramble.
Yeah.
We get like 5-6 minutes in. I go, this is awful, and then I make us start over, and then you're angry.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought if I wrote a script, which I told you we were just not to the letter, but this was just like a little guideline for us, that we wouldn't ramble. But now I think people probably think this is the script.
Okay, guys, it's really not the script. This is my script. What? Stop it. Okay. What?
It's a guideline.
Okay.
As you're proving.
That's basically...
As you are demonstrating right now, so it was a guideline.
Okay, all I'm saying is that I feel like you've had some guests, co-hosts, or...
One. Okay. Well, one last year, yes. One last week.
And did you have a actual conversation? Did you let this person speak, or did this person sit there and go, what? Okay.
You've already spoken exponentially more than Julia did.
Okay, so all I'm saying is I don't want a script, and I'm a little insulted this morning.
Okay, well, I apologize.
Okay. So...
So go off the script.
I think I just did.
Okay.
All right. So getting back to your answer...
I got up really early to write this thing. Okay.
Well, I'm not using it. So you asked me how happy are we for Christian.
Yeah.
I'm so happy. First of all, one of his restaurants is about a minute and a half from us.
Yes.
So we've spent a lot of time at Fortina.
Yes.
His food is so comforting and delicious and the exact kind of thing that you want to eat after a long day of commuting. Trust me when I tell you this.
I would agree with that, but here's the thing. First of all, one of his restaurants is in Brooklyn, and there's no commuting there. Second of all, this is why you need to keep to the script, Caitlin Friedman, because you did not explain to people who don't know what it is that Fortina is an Italian-American restaurant.
Yeah.
We originally know his restaurants because one of our kids had a weekly doctor's appointment in the town of Armonk, New York, location of the original Fortina. So we used to go there. We were like, what is this place? We love that one. We talk about it in the episode. And then about a year ago, a year and a half ago, a Fortina Yonkers opened. Yonkers is the next town over from us. But in reality, we're about a football field from the Yonkers town line. And that Fortina is about a mile from our house. We're there all the time. And that's where we met Christian Petroni.
Right.
Yes.
And then?
And then I got to know him. Our buddy Rob Petrone has a show on Fios called Restaurant Hunter. And Rob is a listener to the show. Hi, Rob. And he reached out and said, hey, I'm doing a thing with a couple of Westchester-based writers and their favorite restaurants. Could we have you come to, well, he didn't say Fortina. He said, pick your favorite restaurant. And I said, I gave him a list of places I like. I said, we go to Sunday dinner a lot at Fortina. And he said, let's do that. And I met Christian during the shoot, and that was, and then we've been hanging out ever since. So Christian recently won this show, Food Network star. See, you messed me up. We're off script. You know, the script was also for me, Caitlin, because I say, and I do that a lot, and I actually take time to edit out the ums. It takes forever.
Okay, I only heard one.
But having a script was going to keep me from doing that. Yes.
Well, you can use your script. How about that?
Well, I don't think that'll really work. it'll be like, I mean, we're in different places. It'll seem like one of us is having a cognitive issue.
All right. Well, all I'm saying
And we're years from that. But anyway, here's what I was going to say. Christian won the show, Food Network star. He is currently on already... They've got him on a show called
The Ultimate
Thanksgiving Challenge. Yes. Now, that show was, I guess, in the works. And the network, this made me feel very powerful, Caitlin. The network told me I had to wait.
What?
To
really?
to air this interview. Because we did this interview in August, but I had to wait to air it because they had something already in the works. He had just won Food Network star. I didn't know what the show was going to be. The show is now on. He is a judge on that show with Carla Hall and a recent guest on the show, Alex Guarnaschelli. And this supports you were out of town, Caitlin. It was when Julie and I were just gabbing away. But this
without a script.
And I put forth the notion that we are developing an Andrew Talks to Chefs cinematic universe, much like the Marvel cinematic universe. So Alex Guarnaschelli is a recent guest on the show. Now we have Christian. I think I need to ring up Carla Hall.
I think you do too.
And get her
and
on the show.
And you've met her, and she's perfectly lovely.
Yeah, she's great. So anyway, Christian and I did the interview in August. I had to sit on it, and now I'm looking at my script, damn you, because now I don't even know where I am anymore. Is that it?
I don't know. I read ahead. Yes, that's
okay,
basically it.
I think that's basically it. We're going to go to the interview. Caitlin, I am glad you are back.
Are you really?
I am. My whole people can hear it. I go from this sort of just kind of perfunctory host, you know, getting an intro out of the way to this very happy host. I just, you know, I really like it. I said it once before. You're the Roseanne Cash to my Johnny Cash.
I love that, but you're not a pill popper.
You're the, that's mean. You are the Elliot to my E.T.
Okay.
You are the Jeremy Irons to my Jeremy Irons.
All right, that's creepy.
Do you even get that one?
Yeah,
that's
totally
a dead ringers joke, everybody. For people who saw
it.
The movie, that was a creepy joke. Anyway, is there anything else we need to say?
No, thank you for having me this morning.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're back.
Enjoy your day.
Okay, everybody. Can you just please imagine that you parked your car in the parking lot in front of Fortina Yonkers back in August and walked inside to the cavernous space? Turned into the back dining room. This is in the hours before the restaurant opens for lunch. And you find me and Christian snacking on a plate of thinly sliced prosciutto and having a conversation. Here you go.
When I met you this morning, you were like my first sign of fall because you came around the corner and you're wearing a flannel shirt.
Yeah,
and it stopped me in my tracks because I'm wearing shorts.
Yeah. I can't
wait. I'm still in summer and you're already in fall.
I'm jumping ahead. My wife gave me a hard time this morning. She's like, why are you dressing like it's cold outside? And I said, excuse me, it's going to be 75 degrees today. Mm-hmm. Low humidity. I'm putting on my flannel and my twill pants.
You're looking forward to fall. Is that your favorite season?
It's probably my favorite season.
Yeah. Now, why is that? I know that you as a kid, because I did a little homework before we met.
Uh-huh.
You used to go hunting.
Yes.
Is that what fall is about for you?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the hunting season? I don't know anything about any of this.
Well, we would go for birds.
Where? You grew up in the Bronx?
I grew up in the Bronx.
So you'd go where to hunt?
We'd go up to Columbia County.
Uh-huh.
Which was about 3 hours from us.
Uh-huh.
And it was another world. And we'd be so excited to go hunting. We'd leave the Bronx at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd head up there.
Now, who's we?
Me,
yeah.
My older brother Lorenzo.
How much older?
4 years older.
Uh-huh.
And then my 4 year younger brother Julio.
Uh-huh. And your dad.
And my dad.
Okay. So and he led the whole thing.
Yeah, he would lead it. Then you know, we'd have uncles meet us out there, Uncle Jerry, Uncle Joe,
yeah.
My godfather Mimo.
Okay.
And it wasn't just about going out and shooting birds and you know, being out in nature, which was really beautiful. You can, I can still smell that like frost, you know, that first frost in the morning of these like cut down cornfields.
Yeah.
And getting ready to walk out and try to flush out some partridge with my dad, you know. And so that was only part of the hunting trip. My favorite parts of the trip were stopping for breakfast on our way up.
Was this like a diner situation or what?
Yeah, tiny, tiny diner in Columbia County.
Which one? Do you remember?
Sugar. Couldn't remember the name.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't been there in years. I remember.
Was it on the Taconic?
No, it was on like, it was in the town of.
I asked because we used to have a weekend place in Chatham. So I'm wondering if I know this diner. Doesn't matter.
Oh, man. It was such a
But if it was within the county, we're talking, for people who don't know Columbia County, Columbia County is very rural. It's very agricultural.
Yep.
So any diner that's off the main highway is probably a pretty small pocket-sized
mom-and-pop
situation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And back in those days, probably a pretty healthy smoking section going on.
Well, yeah, I never forget it.
Yeah.
I can smell
I'm sure.
The eggs frying and the bacon and the cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's beautiful,
actually. Yeah,
That's where I had Eggs Benedict for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Was on one of these hunting trips, and I saw it. I asked my dad, what is it? And he just said, it's good. You should try it. And I tried it, and it blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd go to Hollybrook Farms, but we used to call it Bobby's Farm.
Okay.
My dad's friend Bobby. My dad would bring him boxes of screws, buckets full of nails.
Was your dad in the hardware business?
My dad was in the construction business.
Construction business.
He would, you know, come across
bulk
items at times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he'd bring them up to Bobby.
Yeah.
And in turn, Bobby would not only let us hunt on his beautiful property, but he would also send us home with fresh milk and fresh eggs.
Oh, my God.
And I'd be so excited because I knew that when we were going home with fresh eggs, that my dad would be making something that I loved called Wolvo Spatud.
What's the second word?
Spatud.
Spatud. Okay.
Spatud. It's a very, it's Neapolitan abomination of the word beaten eggs.
Okay.
And my dad would make it for us. He would take the egg yolks, some sugar, a little bit of wine.
Yes.
And he'd whip it up. And we were like, man, this guy's a fucking genius.
Uh-huh.
My dad's a genius. Like, this is the best dessert ever.
Yeah.
This is my favorite. It would be pale and gooey and so sweet.
Yeah.
Come to find out years later that he was making Zabayon.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime I make zabayon, anytime I eat zabayon, anytime mm-hmm. I teach one of my cooks how to make zabayon, it brings me back to the night of our hunting trips.
You're making your dad's zabayon.
My dad's zabayon.
That's the taste memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't just about going out there and
right.
blowing birds out of the sky,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
My God, for the love of God, sometimes we'd come home with nothing. We're terrible, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't always birds, I guess.
Did you care? Did you feel like you'd blown it if you came home empty-handed?
I'd be happy because we had fresh eggs and milk. And
you still had a
everything was cool.
A haul.
I remember the outside of the gallon of milk reeked of the farm,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so good and so smooth and so sweet. And my father still goes up there.
Is that right?
I haven't been in years.
Now, what can I ask, what generation American was your dad? Was your dad born in Italy?
My mother and father were both born on a very small island called Ponza.
Uh-huh.
It's off the coast of, like, you know, between, like, Rome and Naples.
Okay.
And it's a very small island. And what's really funny is that they both grew up on this island, but they didn't meet until they both ended up in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
So my father...
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, pretty funny. They met in my...
Was this through a social club or something?
No, they met in my uncle's barbershop in the Bronx.
Are you serious?
Yeah, pretty wild. But they were from the same island.
But wait, you, men and women didn't go to the same place to get their hair cut the Bronx.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that my mom was hanging out in her brother's barbershop.
Oh,
and that's
I see.
Where she met my
Got
dad.
It. Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so that's pretty funny considering that where they come from is yeah. such a small... little island,
yeah,
you know?
But that's not an insignificant detail, right? Because dialect and in terms of the language they came here speaking.
Oh, they had a very
that was a real bonding situation.
Instant yeah. bond, especially to be even nowadays when I hear people have even heard of this island.
Yes,
I feel a bond with them. You know,
you're describing everything you've said so far: the hunting, the your dad, you know, having this touch in the kitchen. This community in the Bronx, the way your parents met. This is very typically, beautifully Italian. Your dad, he didn't call it this, but basically bartering for eggs and milk. Like, this is all stuff that goes, this is part of a great tradition.
It's the best, and it's some of my fondest memories
yeah.
in the whole world.
Yeah.
Truly.
Did you grow up speaking Italian? Did you learn how to speak Italian? Do you speak Italian?
I speak some Italian. Neapolitan.
Yeah.
Which is a really, you know, it's rough.
Uh-huh.
You know? Huh? It's a rough dialect.
I don't know this. Is this considered, is there like a self-consciousness around Neapolitan?
No. But, you know, just the Neapolitan dialect is so different from proper Italian.
Yeah.
And from, like, you know, Roman Italian or
okay.
Milanese Italian.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah, it's very different.
Is this the equivalent of, like, a Cockney accent in England or something like that?
You know what,
or,
dude?
Like, an outer borough accent in New York?
Yeah.
Like, is it really?
Like someone,
I never knew this.
It'd be like somebody meeting, you know, a New Yorker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like,
yeah,
oh, you're definitely from Naples, bro.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
And, so I grew up hearing that,
yeah,
and having my parents speak to us mm-hmm. in that language.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was that we would respond in English.
Okay.
Lazy Americans. You know what I mean?
They didn't like that.
No, they let it go.
They let it go.
They let it go.
Okay, so I want to talk about, as we move forward here, this is interesting to me. You're known, the Fortino restaurants are Italian restaurants or Italian-American restaurants, but there is a very strong through line of two other countries in your culinary background, right? You were very influenced by France, and you were very influenced by Spain.
Oh, yes.
As you were coming up. So can you just talk to us a little bit about how you first got interested in the idea of, I think these are two separate things. Cooking, you just talked about your dad and the zabayon, uh-huh. right? But and also the idea of being a chef.
I was so intrigued. You know, I was working in a Mediterranean restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't work for a bunch of cool, famous chefs. And
you weren't working for Where are we now time-wise when you start working in restaurants?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my first job,
yeah,
I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
I had to lie and say I was 13.
Yeah. This is a common theme on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was at a catering hall in Scarsdale.
Okay.
Called Alex and Henry's.
And how old? And what year was this, roughly?
Oh, my God.
I'm asking you to date yourself.
I'm really bad at this. So if I'm 34 now.
Okay.
Right?
So this is around 96.
Yeah, man. Wow. Okay. That's okay. Wild.
Okay.
And those were fun fucking times.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They were fun times.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with all these older, cool dudes, you know?
Yeah.
And my brother was working there.
Is that how you got in?
That's how I got in with my brother. And
were you in the kitchen or were you
front of house? No, I was a bar back.
You were a bar back?
Yeah, man. I was a bar back. It was crazy. This catering hall is legendary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was, you know, guys that I adore till this day are guys that I met working there as a kid.
Yeah.
And they were way older than me at the time. And I would get locked in the freezer with the ice sculptures. I would get, you know, watermelon sculptures thrown at me from the balcony above.
This is just them giving you the business.
Yeah.
Like a hazing.
Know, yeah. You're getting saran wrapped to a hand truck. You know, all the usual stuff. And then put into the freezer.
But you loved all that.
Loved it. Loved it. I got to bake the cookies for the Viennese table.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so cool. And I just felt like the coolest kid in the world just being able to work there.
Yeah. Now, just quickly, Viennese table. I'm not going to go into it because on our fourth episode ever, Amanda Freitag was on. She cooked at a place growing up. And we gave a whole long explanation of what the Viennese hour is.
Viennese hour.
In an Italian-American catering situation. Suffice it to say, so you can listen to that show if you want an explanation, but suffice it to say, it's a pretty serious amount of pastry production.
It's a production in general.
Yeah.
Usually some sort of pyrotechnics involved.
Yeah.
Fire, cookies.
Yeah.
Ice sculptures.
Yes.
Yeah. Lighting. The whole night.
And you got involved in all that.
Oh, I loved it. Because from being a bar back, I then got to go and work on the Viennese team.
Uh-huh.
And those were some really amazing memories. There was this guy, Peter Paul Mary. We used to call him Weasel, right?
Yeah.
He could throw a strawberry. Picture this catering kitchen that's half a football field long. He can time somebody walking out from the dining room into the kitchen, and he can throw a strawberry like a frozen rope across this kitchen and nail people right in the head like nothing I've ever seen in my life. And I got such a kick out of that. I would, you know, I'd catch the strawberries every now and again to myself, to the head. And, oh, my God, what fantastic memories. What fantastic memories we made in this catering hall. It was such a shit show.
I mean, you're really talking, when you say this wasn't, you weren't working in, like, you know, the fancy New York City. I mean, you're talking about these places. This is most restaurants.
Yeah, this was like,
I mean, this is like what most restaurants are not, you know, what Mary Sue Milliken called the one percenters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like most restaurants aren't, like what you do now is not your typical thing. The typical thing is the kind of restaurant you came up cooking in.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And it was wild, wild times.
Uh-huh.
And I did that for many, many years.
Yeah.
And we speak so fondly on those days. And what the hell did I know, man? I was, you know, 12 to 16, 17 years old.
Now, when you went in there so early and wanted to be there to the point that you would lie about your age, was it just because you wanted a job and your brother was there and that was a way to make some money? Or was it because you thought you might want to be a cook?
No, my brother was there. I always knew I wanted to be a cook.
Yeah.
But I wasn't rushing to get into the kitchen at that age, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I like being around it.
Yeah.
So that was really great.
Yeah.
But... yeah, no, I wanted to be independent. I wanted to make money. I like nice things. I always liked nice things, I guess.
What's your like weakness?
I mean, I like food. Yeah, food, man.
You like to eat well.
We eat well.
Yeah.
We eat well. We spend way too much money on groceries to have the best stuff. And,
yeah. Wine?
And Not a ton of wine. I've been drinking a lot of Lambrusco.
I just had Lambrusco last night.
Oh, I have the best.
Okay.
The best fucking Lambrusco. Yeah. And we've been drinking a lot of Lambrusco. What's up, babe? We've been drinking a lot of Lambrusco. You know, we're not, you know, this time of year, we're having a spritz at home.
Yeah.
You know, we're keeping it pretty simple.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
But, you know, having the nice pasta sheeter at home, having the nicer, you know, we got the pizza oven at home.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of a guilty pleasure.
So how do you start pursuing your path?
So I was working at a place called Trotters in White Plains, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And no affiliation to Charlie Trotters.
Right.
And we were cooking Mediterranean food. Italian. There were Portuguese owners.
Mm-hmm.
Some Portuguese food, some Spanish, but mostly Italian, Portuguese-based. Yeah. And we had an opportunity to reconcept the restaurant. And we said to ourselves, well, hey, you know, it was a lot of fun. We're like, what are we going to do?
What's your role at this point?
At this point, I'm a sous chef.
Okay.
Anthony Goncalves is the chef owner.
Oh, I just met him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's at the top of the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah, Anthony's the man.
Yeah.
So I worked for him for many years.
Okay.
So we were going to reconcept Trotters. And we said, what are we going to do? Because Anthony was moving up to the 42nd floor of the Ritz,
mm-hmm.
Moving the Trotters concept to the 42nd mm-hmm. floor. And first we were talking about maybe doing a brasserie. Then we talked about doing this, talked about that, we talked about this. And I didn't know shit about Spanish food. And we said, what about tapas? And we all liked the idea. I remember we were sitting on the hood of his car before service in Trotters, before Trotters was closing.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, let's do tapas. You know, it's small plates and classic tapas and mm-hmm. some reinvented tapas. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I knew nothing about the food, so I started to read. We traveled.
You guys went to Spain?
Yeah. We traveled. I read a lot. I met Marco Santaella from De España Brand Foods,
mm-hmm.
who ended up being a big influence in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me about jamón and arbequina olive oil mm-hmm. and all these things that I ended up really loving. And we opened Paniche, and I was a chef de cuisine. And I got the excellent in the New York Times, which was, I think I was the youngest guy at the time to have gotten that. I was like 22 or 23. Mm-hmm. And we had really good times there. It was a really special place.
Mm-hmm.
And from there is how I really evolved my love for Spanish cuisine. Always going home and having the spaghetti and meatballs on Sundays. Mm-hmm. But during the week, I lived Spanish.
Yeah. What appeals to you about Spanish food? Smile that just spread across your face.
I just love it. It's they just in a couple bites you can just do such great things and be so inspired and have some of the best eating in the world just at your fingertips and everything you eat is just so damn good.
Yeah.
And you know, I was just talking about the prosciutto, how I love the dry end, you know, because probably because it reminds me of jamón.
Yeah, well, explain that for a second. Right before we started recording, you said, I'll be right back. And you came back with this plate of thinly sliced prosciutto. And you explained that you like the end cut.
It's a fresh, boneless leg of 24-month-age black label Gretchen Fulzani prosciutto.
Yep.
And on the end.
Yep.
Or the beginning, for that matter.
Right.
On the slicer, when you first start cutting the first cuts of the prosciutto, they're extra dry.
Right.
And you almost get like those pins and needles in your throat a little bit. It's just extra salty and delicious. And I think the reason why I love this prosciutto in general is because it reminds me of jamón, which is usually drier than a prosciutto.
And a little saltier, no?
Yeah, I'd say so.
A little bit, yeah.
And that's why I like this ham, mm-hmm. but I especially like the first, you know, 25 slices, which is what we have here right now. We're down to the last couple.
It's great. If anyone heard me chewing during this interview, that's...
Yeah, there you go. That one's yours. This one's mine.
I think you probably are owed more than I am.
No.
I think I took more than my share.
You're a guest, my friend.
I always, do you do this when you're sharing food? I'm actually hyper aware of.
Well, no one ever touches the last piece
comes,
of food.
No, but if something comes and there's six pieces, like I'm aware of how many I've had. I keep a count.
No, I'm bad.
Yeah.
My wife is aware for me. She's like I remember being in Italy and being the first one to get the plate of like bocconcinis, and I throw three of them on, and she's like, yo, slow down. No one else got any. Right. You know?
So, well, I remember you called me a couple of months ago. It was a Saturday morning, and you said, come by the restaurant. And I met you, and you had a little Spanish breakfast laid out.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, we had a little pan con tomate, some padron peppers out of the wood oven.
Cava.
And we had some cava.
Yeah. But that surprised me, given what I know you as.
Yeah. You know, it just so happens that everything I have in the kitchen already can be turned very Spanish very quickly.
Right. But those were clearly touchstones for you.
Those are my favorite items in the whole world. Yeah. Pan con tomate.
Yeah.
Good ham.
Yeah.
Really good ham. Mm-hmm. It's got to be great ham. Mm-hmm. And some peppers with a lot of malt and sea salt, you know, just toasted in the wood oven.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Honestly, is there anything, is there a better
snack?
No, it's great
and it's simple.
It's salty, olive oil, just there's bread, there's ham, there's just, it's all, the whole gang's there, you know?
Okay, so talk to me about the French piece. I've seen interviews with you where you've talked about like being fascinated by television shows about great chefs and that whole piece of it. Where does that fit into your sort of culinary DNA or just your view of your industry?
It was very, very early in my life. There was one Discovery Channel.
Uh-huh.
You know, now there's like...
Right.
Discovery
the Ocho. Home.
The Ocho.
Right. Yeah.
Discovery Channel 8. And I love each one of them more than the other, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
But back then, there was one Discovery Channel. It was Channel 20 on my cable box in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a show called Great Chefs of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take place mostly in hotels. And it was... an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert.
They would demo these.
They would be demo
chef.
like a dump and stir, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Stand and stir.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mostly French chefs, you know, a lot of them working in the Caribbean, some of them in France, but these hotels, usually Ritz-Carlton type hotels. And they'd make an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert with three different chefs. And I was just, oh, my God. There was no cooler show.
What appealed to you about it?
I don't know. It just felt right. It just like that is just awesome. Uh-huh. I remember them demoing foie gras, and that was where I saw foie gras for the first time. Mm-hmm. And the chef was showing how to flip it properly, and you know, and he screwed up the first piece and did it again, And I was just like, whoa, what is this foie gras shit, man? This seems amazing.
Yeah.
And then they had a spinoff of the show called Great Chefs Hawaiian Style.
Yeah.
And that's where, I saw them cooking pigs in the ground and all these great hotels in Hawaii where they're making these amazing dishes. And, you know, like, and I was, you know, I had to be like... 7, 8, 9, you know, and I loved it. Loved it.
Like, you wanted to be one of those guys.
Yeah, I was like, I gotta cook. I want to cook. Yeah. That's where it started. It started there for me.
Did you ever entertain the idea of cooking school or no?
You know, I did. I went for a little bit. Don't really talk about it. Wasn't really my thing. And you know, next.
Okay.
I just don't have much of a stance on it. I just, you know, I think you can learn a lot by aligning yourself with good people and the right people. And you don't necessarily need to spend a ton of money.
I'm sorry, was that a loaded?
No, not at all. Okay, not at all, dude. But
you're not the first. I don't know if you know David Waltuck, who had Chanterelle Restaurant for 30 years, dropped out of the CIA.
Yep.
He just, it wasn't for him.
Yeah.
You know, he was learning in kitchens at the same time.
Not for me. School is never my thing.
That was not for you.
School.
Was school not for you as a kid?
School, I was not a good student. I was a good kid.
You stayed out of trouble.
I tried to. But, like, I remember...
You had a good heart.
I had a good heart. And yes. I think they saw something in me, thank God, because...
Who's that? You mean at the school?
My teachers. I remember, you know, in Stepanak High School, where I went, in White Plains. I remember it was, like, junior year.
Was that a private school?
It was a, yeah, Catholic.
Parochial school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Catholic all-boys high school.
Yeah. I only asked because you lived in the Bronx and you were going to school in White Plains.
I followed my brother. Yeah. Okay. I took the Metro North up there and at the school my brother went to. And I did a lot of things my brother did.
Okay.
And it was like junior year and it was the first couple days of school.
Yeah.
It was a new headmaster. And I was sitting in homeroom. Something like that, and they called me down to the headmaster's office. Christian Petroni, come down to the headmaster's
over the loudspeaker?
Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay. And I walk into Mr. Murphy's office.
Yeah.
And no one knew this guy. He was new to the school.
Yeah.
And he's looking at a file, which is presumably my file. And he goes, how are you still in this school? I said, what are you talking about?
This is like the first scene of Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood and John Vernon.
I love it.
He
goes, dude, how are you still in this school? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, you have terrible grades.
Yeah.
You don't contribute. You don't do much. Yeah. You know, you're not in any clubs.
Yeah.
And again, your grades are just god awful. Like, you go to summer school, like, what's your deal, man? And he goes, don't even answer, because I know already. He goes, everybody seems to really like you. I said, I don't know. I hope so. I try to be nice to everybody and polite. And he goes, you got to get your shit together or else you're out. And then those last 2 years, I scraped by without having to go to summer school.
But it was hard.
It was hard. School's hard for me. It just wasn't my thing.
Now, let me ask you a question. I don't know you that well, but we had a quick... we met in November, I think. We kind of had a quick chemistry.
Yep.
You're clearly a smart guy. You've done very well for yourself at a young age. Did you have the typical, like, Cook's issues with school? Like it wasn't that you were not a smart guy. It was that you didn't like sitting still. You didn't like...
Oh, yeah. I have ADD.
All that
but,
structure. It's
oh,
like,
God,
yeah.
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 I definitely have ADD. Yeah. I was never diagnosed.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And, like, I think school would have been way easier for me if...
If you... Like, if someone it was now.
If someone helped me out.
Yeah, you probably just missed it.
I did. Because
you probably
nobody...
just missed, like, the... Like, right... 10 years later, it's like everyone's got Ritalin and Adderall.
Yeah.
And,
no one thought to, like, maybe there's something else wrong why he can't... I remember picking up the SAT study guide.
Yeah.
I remember so vividly. I picked it up. I opened like the first page or the not even like the glossary.
Yeah.
I looked at it and I was like, fuck this. And I closed it and put it down.
But why was it? Was it just overwhelming?
Overwhelming. Yeah. It was like,
where do I even start with this?
Yeah, I can't do this. I can't. I couldn't and I didn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. See, I was diagnosed with ADD as an adult, like in the last year or two. And like, I am like that with stuff. Like,
really?
Yeah, like if something has to be assembled, you know? We have two kids, right? Something needs to be assembled.
Oh, God, dude.
Like,
the worst.
I open one of those, what do they call it?
Like the packet?
The schematic.
Yeah.
And I'm just, it literally, I have to work up to doing that.
Oh, dude, it's the IKEA.
Or doing my QuickBooks every tax season.
Yeah.
I have to work up to that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, it freaks me out.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. It's hard to explain to people who don't know what that is.
Oh, yeah. So I suffer from that a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, elementary school would have been just way less torturous.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough, man. I remember, my God, second grade. I remember second grade fear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so scared of my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I can't be good. I was so scared of my teacher. I was so scared that I didn't know the answers. Mm. I was so scared that I probably didn't do my homework and I was going to get yelled at. I can count on one hand, I think, how much homework I did from like the fourth grade to high school.
So those experiences can chip away at your confidence, right? And then starting at age 12, you start getting positive reinforcement in your hospitality experiences.
That's where the real learning started, I feel like. Yeah. That's where I learned about life and you know, having to work hard to succeed. And I saw it because I started as a barback and I busted my ass and they moved me up. I think barbacks got paid $35 a night and then you'd get some tips.
And then
the Viennese boys, 55 a night.
The Viennese boys.
Oh, yeah, dude. And we got to work with Weasel, which we all loved.
Yeah.
And it was a bump. And I was like, shit, okay, so you work hard.
Yeah.
You get more money.
Yeah.
I like money.
Yeah.
So I worked hard.
Yeah.
And just exposed to people that were just like felons and, you know, God knows what drugs they were doing, you know.
Or, right.
But everyone was like, but there was great camaraderie, you know.
Right. It's like all the Tony Bourdain stuff that's kind of not.
And I never got involved in that stuff, you know. I didn't really get involved in any of that stuff ever in my whole life.
But it's exciting to have proximity to it.
Yeah, I was around it, and I knew my role, and I just knew that these guys were just hard workers. I remember the dishwashing team at these places were just like the surliest men I've ever seen in my life, you know, and. They were cool. They watched. They looked out for me, you know, and because I was like the one of the youngest guys there.
Yeah,
it was just such a great experience.
So, you move on in your cooking career. You go to work for the Barcelona, restaurants.
Andy Forzheimer.
Tell us about this.
Yeah.
First of all, tell us about what that was, and tell us about your role there.
Yeah, so...
I mean, they still exist.
Yeah, yeah. Barcelona, big group. They opened Bar Taco. They're now known as Barteca.
Uh-huh.
Recently acquired by the Del Frisco's group.
Mm-hmm.
And...
these are restaurants that are up around, like, Westchester County, Connecticut.
Yeah, one in Westchester, they were predominantly based out of Connecticut in Fairfield County, and then they had a place in New Haven, West Hartford, you know, and then they went nationwide, and they were big inspiration. They're big inspirations of ours.
So Barcelona, the full name is Barcelona Wine Bar, and the guy behind it was a guy named Andy Forzheimer, who most people probably don't know that name, but Andy was actually a chef in New York City in the 1980s, early 1990s, and then kind of went the business route.
Andy
became an entrepreneur.
Andy taught me how to be successful in the restaurant business, just how to cook good.
You mean how to make the numbers work?
And,
So you came in there in what role?
Andy really liked me.
Yeah.
And he met me at Paniche. And he
was he a customer there?
He came in as a customer. I met him, and then
and he said, "What? I could use a guy like you."
No, he worked me over for about a year and a half.
Okay,
he slowly worked me. You know, played the long game with me.
Uh huh.
And I ended up going there as a partner.
Really?
Oh yeah. I was a chef partner of Barcelona in Greenwich.
Uh huh.
And I was. That's where I met John Nealon. My partner now in Fortina. And that's where I really learned how to run the business side of things from Andy. So he put me, thrusted me into this role of essentially chef partner, chef owner, you know.
But he mentored you through the half that you didn't really know yet.
Yeah, they did.
How did they do that? Like, did they sit down and...
They drill you and beat you up, essentially. So we would have a weekly Wednesday meeting and we would...
And that was like that was like school.
That was school.
That you liked.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah. Because you could see how it related to your success, to your job. Yeah.
The numbers were exciting to me. I loved it.
Were you good at that part?
Nope.
No. But you learned.
I learned.
Okay.
And I'm still, you know... consider myself a novice in that part. But
is
that's
that right? But you got partners.
I got smart people around.
So how long were you with that company?
I was with Barcelona for about 3.5 years.
Okay. And then Fortina comes about how?
So, you know, I was like this cocky young chef. I won Chopped. Thought that was, you know, that was a big deal for me at the time. It was great for the restaurant. Chopped was only season 4, so it was really... It was a really exciting time for the show.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I'm gonna open my own thing. I'm ready to do something. I need to do my own thing. I need to be my own boss.
Mm-hmm.
Had a great conversation with Andy. He gave me his blessing. And, you know, I was very naive. I thought it was going to be very easy to just go out there and, you know, get somebody to invest money in me. And
yes.
Off to the races.
Right.
Well, turned into one of the roughest two-year periods of my life.
Yeah.
Really rough. I got really down to nothing. Was so broke. Would have to hide my car because they were going to repo it. Like,
really?
Oh, yeah. Like,
you mean like park it like blocks away from...
Oh, yeah. Blocks away from my house. Friends' driveways. Because I was trying to make this dream of Fortina happen. Throughout this whole process, we were schmoozing potential investors, doing pop-up dinners to make money.
Audition dinners for investors.
Dinners for investors. Yeah. Dinners for just people.
Yeah.
You know, like, listen. And thank God people came. And that's how we paid our cell phone bills and stuff, you know. And it was tough. And then finally I met... some people that I've known for a very long time came to me with the opportunity of Fortina Armonk.
Did they own the space, or they knew about?
Yeah, they own the space.
Okay, so for people who don't know, that space is stunning.
Oh,
how do
it's
you
special.
Describe it?
It's lodgy.
I was gonna say it's like a big barn almost, but it's like a lodge. It's got soft wood, and when I go there, I feel like I'm on vacation. It's 20 minutes from where we're sitting right now. But when I go, I used to have to go to Armonk once a week. And when I would go sometimes get a drink or some meatballs at the bar or something, I felt like I was elsewhere in there.
Yeah, Armonk is a very special place.
Yeah, it's a tony little town.
Oh, yeah. Quiet little, you know, hamlet that rolls
very
off the sidewalks.
Very pretty in the holidays.
Oh, yeah, the holidays, it's great.
Yeah.
And now we put up all of our Italian-American plastic Christmas decorations in the front. Those are always fun. People love those.
So it was a two-year process from...
Yeah, about 2 years.
Jumping the Barcelona ship to putting together the first Fortina.
Fortina, yeah. And we got the money that we needed, and we got it built out. And it was busy, man. From day one, the place was just jamming. And the first 6 months of Fortina, I've really... like any trauma event, have been blocked from my brain.
Uh-huh.
But...
just seat of your pants, like...
we had no idea what we were doing. Yeah, and we had no clue what we were doing. And it just turned into just such a magical place, and it's still, like, one of my favorite places to be in the whole world.
That,
like,
particular one.
Oh, my baby. It's the first one, you know?
What made you... zero in on the type of food that you do at Fortina's? In other words, you spend a lot of time actually not just admiring Spanish food, but cooking it, right?
Yeah.
And then you come back, it sounds corny, but you kind of come back to your roots ultimately.
Yeah.
Was that always the game plan for you? Or when did you decide that's what you wanted to stake your claim on?
Yeah, there's really not much of a story behind it. I think that I was probably just sitting around and I was like, fuck it, let's do Italian.
Yeah.
You know? And the original Fortina, even while we were on the construction, the food at Fortina was way more chefy than...
Oh, really?
During
the development period?
Oh, yeah. It was way chefier.
You were like, I got a place now. I'm going to, like, show everybody what I can do.
Yeah. Let's do chefy shit, you know?
Uh-huh.
And...
So you were doing kind of, like, modern Italian...
Well, that was the plan.
Yeah.
Was to do like modern Italian, you know, sweet bread ravioli, brown butter and sage and hazelnut. And
squeeze bottles in the kitchen.
You know, we were going to do it. You know, we were like excited. And
most people probably don't know Armonk, but if people knew Armonk, that would make sense.
Yeah. And
because there are some restaurants in that town that are run by like people who used to work at Union Square Hospitality and, you know.
And don't get
and there's a lot of money in that town.
Yeah.
So there's...
Don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with that type of food, sure. But that's what Fortina was in the beginning, and there was one fateful afternoon.
Oh, you actually opened doing that kind of food?
No. Oh. It was before we opened. Okay. It was actually a couple of weeks before we
so
opened.
So you're in there doing test dishes and
development?
Yeah,
we're testing dishes. Yeah. We're on the construction. Yeah. We're cooking here, cooking there.
Yeah.
And it was one lazy, Tuesday afternoon, and we were all hanging out.
Yeah.
And my little brother goes, why don't we go to a place you haven't been to in a very long time? And I said, where's that? And he said, the Venice in the South Bronx. And
did you say the Venice?
The Venice.
That's a restaurant?
That was a restaurant.
Okay. Is it actually just Venice, but everyone calls it the Venice? Or is it called the Venice?
I got to confirm that. We all called it the
Venice.
Yes,
I get
wonder what the sign that said the Venice.
I bet the sign just says Venice. But go ahead.
So the Venice, man. And my godfather worked there growing up.
Uh-huh.
My go-to dish there was chicken parm and steak fries.
Uh-huh.
That's why we serve our chicken parm uh-huh. with steak fries here uh-huh. at the restaurant. A lot of inspiration from the Venice. But at this point, I hadn't been back since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because when my mother would go to Italy to visit her mom a couple extra times in the year, we'd eat at the Venice every night.
Uh-huh.
So we sit
the
down.
Venice. I love this.
Oh, man.
I can smell the garlic knots.
Mm. The dining room had not been remodeled for, since the 50s or 60s. Still a payphone in the back.
Waiters who'd been there forever.
The best shrimp parm on the planet. And we sit down, and I'm like, wow, I'm really excited to be here. Really, really excited. And we're ready to eat, and we sit down, and like magic, like a vision, in front of me appears this giant basket of garlic bread with melty, oozy mozzarella cheese.
Hmm.
And I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And before I can even finish saying that, next to it gets dropped a bowl of piping hot spicy marinara sauce.
For dunking.
Yeah. And I said, holy shit. Holy shit. This is food people want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
This is food people want.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of food we need to fucking give people. They don't want.
No.
Fancy schmancy. Like, I'm not fancy schmancy. What am I doing trying to cook this food that's not me? Like, garlic bread is me. Chicken parm and steak fries is me. You know? And spaghetti with fucking marinara sauce is me.
Mm-hmm.
Pasta asciutto, also known as pasta asciutto. And the whole trajectory changed that day. Everything changed that day. Like a four-leaf clover, shining like a tanning bright, landing on all four feet like a cat who's ready for a wild night.
My theme song and break music is from After School Specials album Double Barrel, Single Entendre, which is available on iTunes.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enameled cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Not only because I use it constantly, but because cabinet space is at a premium in New York City kitchens. My boyfriend and I were gifted our Le Creuset by his family last Christmas, and it was the first piece of enameled cookware we'd ever owned. I'd been fawning over the marine blue color, especially when I realized there were only a few left in stock. When we unwrapped the box, we were pleasantly surprised to see how big this thing was. I immediately started imagining what I could cook. Roast chicken, Texas-style chili, a leg of lamb, or my favorite, a huge batch of Marcella Hazan's bolognese. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET.com/HRN, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Well, since we're not doing a script, why don't you welcome everybody back?
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this interview.
Oh, my God. It's so bad.
Well, it's better than me going, okay, what?
Welcome back to the show. We're going to get you back to the rest of our interview with Christian Petroni in just a moment. But first, our weekly reminder that you can follow this show on Instagram. The handle is at Chef Podcast. You can also subscribe. It's free at iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you get your podcasts. And if you would leave us a rating or review, as always, we would love you for that. And I do, Caitlin, I've been trying to back off on the promotion of it, but I do have to say, since you didn't, that Chef's Drugs and Rock and Roll was named one of Amazon.com's 20 best food, wine, or cookbooks of 2018.
That's so great. I would have said it, but it wasn't.
Are you proud of me?
It wasn't on my script. I'm really, really. Yes, I sent you a note when I was on traveling saying this is awesome.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. And with that, everybody, here's the rest of the interview with Chef Christian Petroni. I hope you enjoy it. Who told you you should go there? Your brother?
My little brother, Julio.
Okay. Is this why he did it? Like, was he...
No, he was just looking for...
He just wanted company for dinner?
He just wanted a good meal.
Okay.
He just wanted a good meal.
Okay. I'm just checking.
And he knew that I'd appreciate it.
I didn't know if there was a plan.
No. Julio's not that smart.
I meant, like, was he coming to these... you know, was he coming in and seeing what you were doing and going, I got to get this guy back to the Venice.
Man, maybe he was. He's a smart kid.
But it all changed right there.
It all changed.
Okay, can I just tell you? So you do your own sort of nod to that garlic bread here.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, for what it's worth, I was at the bar not even a week ago with my wife. We ordered a salad. We ordered spaghetti meatballs. We ordered two glasses of wine. The bartender walked away. And my wife looks at me. She didn't even have to say it. I go, you want the garlic bread? She goes, get the garlic bread.
Oh. So good. I mean, but garlic bread, like...
That thing is, yeah.
One of my favorite memes.
I mean,
was,
it's basically a deconstructed pizza in a way. Or do it... Or
like
assemble
French, like French bread,
bread
pizza.
Bread with cheese on it. You dunk it. Yeah.
Just add butter and garlic.
Yeah.
It's just so fucking good.
Yeah, it's my really
favorite.
Great.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Yeah. It's my favorite.
So from that moment, did it all come together quickly? Did everything come together in a rush?
No, it was very organic. You know, from there, we were like, you know.
No, I didn't mean that you were hurried, but I mean, did it all fall into place naturally?
Yeah, it all kind of fell into place relatively quickly.
Yeah.
You know, we were like, all right, come on, let's get back to the shit that we like, you know, rice balls and what makes us different from your run-of-the-mill red sauce joint is that we cook in these wood ovens. We have these two giant wood ovens in every restaurant. And I didn't only want to do red sauce, but I wanted to do simple wood-fired cooking. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do, when asparagus was at the height of its season, wood-fired asparagus with lemon and sea salt. Mm-hmm. And cauliflower with hazelnut romesco. Mm-hmm. Or wood-roasted carrots with walnut crema.
Mm-hmm.
So you can come to Fortina and go pizza and chicken parm all day.
Mm-hmm.
And pasta and meatballs, and that's all great.
Yeah.
But you can also come here and get beautiful wood-roasted vegetables that are just very prepared very simply and with love.
Yeah.
Because we take that shit very seriously.
And you can mix and match.
That's what's beautiful. I love seeing a table with like a piatto di verdura, which is a big plate of our wood roasted vegetables.
Yep.
And they'll have a garlic bread next to it and a pizza next to it and a couple of salads. I mean, right? The book writes itself.
Yeah. you know what else you guys, I don't know the answer to this. So if it's not a good answer, I'm going to make this question go away in my editing. The tartufo.
The tartufo is not made by us.
Okay.
Should we talk about it?
That tartufo to me is, and all it is it's vanilla and chocolate ice cream.
Vanilla, chocolate with a cherry and almond.
Cherry in the center and a chocolate shell, and it comes cut in half, and it is, every component of it is, it's not fancy. In other words, it's not like super expensive chocolate, like, but for what it is perfect.
It is the tartufo that anyone growing up in the 80s and 90s would get and we found the factory that's been making them for the past 50 years, and we make sure that I get it from them.
Yeah.
And it's a nostalgia thing. It's not about my ego. Yeah, I can make a delicious tart. I can go back there right now and make a tartufo with amarena cherries and burrata gelato,
right,
hazelnut shell.
Yeah.
But I like the one from the factory.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I come across something that, well, the most famous example was, it was almost a scandal when years ago, Thomas Keller volunteered, I think, in an interview that they used a brand of frozen French fry at the Bouchon, at least the one in New York, because he thought he'd found a great product.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, well, it's great. Well, okay, you know.
It's a great product. Why not use it?
Yeah, and I remember David Walzog, who was the original chef, and he was there for years at the Strip House restaurants. They had like five sauces you could get, you know, Bernays, Hollandaise, da, da, da. And one of them was a Thai sauce. And so he made all the sauces, but the Thai sauce he bought from some market in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, I can't make a better.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people make their own ketchup, you know? Because why would you when Heinz exists?
Heinz is so good. You're
going to make a better ketchup than Heinz?
I know. Please don't give me your homemade
ketchup. I'm calling
ketchup.
This the Heinz principle. I'm naming it right now.
I
if
love
you
it.
Can't
I
make it,
it
better, you should buy it.
Don't you get so annoyed when you get a homemade ketchup? Does
yes.
it bother you? It
yes.
bothers the shit out of me.
It bothers me, and it bothers me if it's a different brand. I'm like, why are you? Why?
Yeah, I know. Why? Heinz did nail it, man. It's so good.
It's perfect. Okay, so we're here. I hope it didn't seem opportunistic. We've been talking about doing an interview forever. It happens
oh, yeah.
to be on the heels of you winning the show, but I didn't know you had won it when we booked it.
Oh, no, we've been trying to do this.
We've been trying to do this for months.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask, because you mentioned Chopped, and then you just did this. How did you first find yourself on television? Did you go after it, or did it come to you?
Andy Forzheimer forced me to do Chopped.
He did.
Oh, yeah.
Because he thought it'd be a good move for you?
Yeah, he thought it'd be good.
And be good for the restaurants.
And it'd obviously be good, you know, because you would throw the Barcelona up on the
yeah.
national screen.
Yeah.
But
were you nervous about it?
He saw something. No, I was never nervous about it. You know, Andy always saw something in me, and he always pushed me to do stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And the TV was one of them. So he got me on to Chopped, you know? And that was really it. And then it just, you know, TV was, you know, the cameras never bothered me, never affected me, you know, being in that environment, you know what I mean? And I've done some little stuff in between, but essentially, out of the blue, a woman named Beth Schiff.
I've heard that.
Yeah,
name.
She's a casting director
yeah.
who casted me for Chopped when I competed, invited me to come on as a judge.
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot because, like, what the hell did she see? Years later.
Had you sent in a...
No.
A vit? No?
No. It was years later.
Yeah.
And I guess you followed me on the gram or maybe on the Facebook at the time
yeah.
or whatever it is. And she said, you know what? You should come in and be a guest judge on the show. And I ended up doing it like, you know, 8 or 9 times.
Yeah.
And that's where I really got comfortable was guest judging on Chopped. I got comfortable in that scenario, sitting
yeah.
next to Alex Guarnaschelli and sitting next to Jeffrey
yeah.
and sitting next to all these awesome, awesome people yeah. that I admire.
It happens to be, I know a lot of these people personally. It's a nice crew at Chopped.
Oh, everyone.
Amanda Freitag, Scott
yeah.
Conan, these are all...
One better than the
yeah,
next.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these are people I've known for 20 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
They were real cool people.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone was so nice to me.
Yeah.
And I had no reason to.
Yeah.
And everyone was really nice to me. My favorite was I was going to get proposed to my wife, and Jeffrey says, come on, let's go get lunch. You know, I'll take you out for lunch. And me, Alex Guarnaschelli, and Jeffrey walk over to Del Posto, and... Jeffrey proceeds to order like $1,000 bottle of Dom Perignon.
Of course he does.
To celebrate
yeah.
my engagement. And we didn't eat any lunch. And it was pretty funny. The server actually dropped the bottle.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a whole debacle. But it was you know, they were all real nice to me
yeah.
And really good to me. And, yeah. And the fact that I was given that opportunity was really, really serendipitous, yeah. you know, because it led to so many other things. And, yeah. you know, now the Beat Bobby Flay stuff
uh-huh.
And of course, Food Network Star, which yeah. was the craziest experience ever in my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you enjoy it?
You know what? I did. It was so tough, man. Making that type of television is really heart-wrenching.
It's long days.
Yeah, you know, we're used to long days, but standing up there
yeah.
and getting, you know, getting critiqued yeah. to your face on a daily yeah. basis yeah. is like, I stopped reading Yelp years ago, you right. know?
And this is like human Yelp.
Yeah, and like, you know, competing under time constraints and yeah. cooking under time constraints.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun.
That's great.
I had a lot of fun.
Now, you seem to me, I've gone through this thing in my life because I have this show now. I've gotten a lot more comfortable doing stuff in the public eye, performing. But you seem to me to be a natural at it. You seem to have a personality that just, for whatever reason, you connect with people. People like the new headmaster said to you.
Yeah.
Right? People like you. Like, you have this personality that just comes through. It does. Whenever I've seen you on camera, and I've known other people, I think yeah. there are people who are like that.
Listen, I think at the end of the day, it's just important to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. like, life will just be easier if you just try to be polite.
Yeah.
And lead your life with an open heart. And
yeah.
that's what I do. And I get burned. You know, it
sure.
happens.
Yes.
I get burned. I get my heart broken.
Yes. That's the cost of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I try to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest thing that's been stressing me out is ever since Food Network Star aired and the finale aired and I was one of the winners.
Yeah.
It was like thousands of text messages and Facebooks
yeah.
and Instagrams and
yeah.
Twitters. And what's stressing me out so bad more than anything else in the whole world is there's someone, and I think I tried to get back to as many people as possible, but there's people out there right now that congratulated me
yeah.
said something inspirational and nice about me, and I haven't responded.
Well, I we're friends on all these different platforms,
yeah.
and I remember like a day or two after you won, you said like, thanks for the outpouring. I'm going to try to get back to everybody eventually.
Yeah, I'm
yeah.
trying my best.
Yeah.
And I really worked hard at it.
It's
I
hard.
Worked really fucking hard
yeah.
for a couple days. I'm
yeah.
getting back to everybody, and I know I miss people.
Right.
And that's what's literally like one of the things that's like keeping me up at night.
Right. So there are people in your shoes who would turn all that over to an assistant. There are people in your shoes who would just say, I can't worry about this. People will understand. And then there are people in your shoes who are going to try to somehow find a way to do it themselves. Yeah.
And
you're,
you know,
in
what's
the
right?
You're in the last category.
What's the right avenue,
it's
right?
Tough.
It's
it
tough.
It is tough.
Yeah.
I, you know, it's nothing near what you went through. I had a book come out earlier this year, and there were some nice reviews, and I would get my own smaller version of what you're describing. And, you know, when you're busy and as I have kids, you have a kid, and you're married, you know, it's like
yeah.
it. You got a lot. You got five restaurants. You know, it's like there's a lot going on. And it sounds like, oh, what's the big deal to return some texts? But that's what for a lot of people is like just downtime, you know?
Yeah.
Like I got 30 minutes to have a glass of wine and do nothing. You want that. You still need that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are times when you don't feel like it's either a little bit of downtime so you don't crack, or I'm going to answer all these texts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes down to.
And then, you know, for me, it's just like rip the Band-Aid off and just like pop it, like, you know, texting away.
Yeah, Christian's pantomiming me doing the texting. But do you feel like a performer?
No.
You don't feel that way?
No, because I'm
you're just yourself.
I am very fortunate that I get to be myself. I don't need
yeah.
to act.
You don't feel like you have to turn something on? When
no.
You, yeah.
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 What did I say? Up the energy a little bit? That's my only thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, I'm always tired.
Are you?
Always tired.
You hide it well.
Oh, thank you.
You hide it well.
Yeah.
All right. So what have I not? What's, can I ask? What's like, you got a lot now. So you got the network relationship. You got a handful of Fortinas.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kind of sticking where you are at the moment, or you still have...
No, we always got fun, got crazy ideas.
You got things you're going to try to do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? We do. We have things that we want to do, that we're going to do, that you should be hearing about. But my biggest priority is Fortina.
Yeah.
And polishing the stone, which is Fortina.
Yeah.
And just making it the place that we all love, and just getting better at it, though.
Yeah,
and making it feel more like a home, and making the hospitality even warmer.
Yes,
make the music even better.
Yeah.
Make the food better.
Yeah.
Make the whatever. Yeah. Just get better. Get better.
Yeah,
that's all I want to do, and that's what I tell these guys, is just always strive to be better. How can you be better? You just saw the kid walk through here with a saute pan.
With
garlic, rosemary, and olive oil in it. And this is something that I started a couple weeks ago. Is like, guys, restaurants, there's cleaning people, there's cooking, there's this, there's that. I was like, really, you can add a nice touch to your place. And I taught them how to make smoky, garlic,
and
olive oil, and rosemary. And they perfume now every morning, before service.
Oh, that's to give the room
they come and they give...
What that was?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can smell it right now.
And I do.
Yeah. It's just a night... So someone that walks in for lunch, that's going to be the first thing they smell,
Got it.
We take a cue from Mr. Walt Disney on that one. But, that's the stuff that I'm talking about. It's like, how can we get better? What are the little touches? What are the little bit of detail that we can add that can really, really help someone's experience? And that's what I'm all about right now.
Yeah.
That's what I'm all about right now.
Cool. Okay, so here's the last thing I want to ask you about. It's a personal fascination of mine, and when you and I first met... I think I texted you on a Sunday, and I said, are you going to be at the restaurant tonight? The restaurant where we're sitting at, I probably have said this in the introduction, but we're like a mile from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote me back and said, babe, it's Sunday, family day. I have always been fascinated, since I used to live in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, with the Italian-American Sunday... I don't even know what to call it. There's the ritual of dinner.
Sure.
But Sunday itself is it's like its own time zone. It's its own...
It's a holiday.
It's not just the seventh day of the week or the first day of the week. Yeah. Every Sunday... Talk to me about this for a minute.
Well, Sundays in my childhood and now in my life with my beautiful wife, Sherry, and my baby, Bo, Sundays are revered and treated like a holiday. Sunday's a family day. Sunday we do something together as a family, whether that's go out somewhere, do something with Bo, get something done around the house, clean the gutters, whatever the hell it is. Sunday is a day for that to happen.
Yeah.
And whether I cook a quick little meal or I make a big spread, Sunday is Sundays for the family.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
You usually handle the cooking duties on that day?
Yeah. I usually end up throwing something together
because
we've exhausted ourselves with activities for the day.
Right.
And I'll just say, we'll either, get something great delivered, or we'll go out for a quick little bite. We'll throw some pizzas in the wood oven at the house, make a couple of pizzas.
Great.
Or we'll throw together like a quick little carbonara.
Yeah.
10 minutes. My wife always says, I'm so shocked that the food that comes, how quickly food can come out of my kitchen.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't believe that this is possible. So I'll believe it, babe.
Yeah, it's because there's a superhero in there.
Yeah. And here's our first guest walking in, and she's smelling some beautiful rosemary and garlic. Yeah. She's got to be excited.
For people who didn't understand when we said this, I don't know, maybe 7 minutes ago, one of the guys who works here walked through the room with a saute pan that was just barely sizzling. He was sort of agitating it as he walked through. And Christian gave him this big nod and a smile. And then as Christian explained, that was to perfume the room just before opening.
Yeah.
That's a great touch.
And that's just us trying to be better.
Yeah.
And hopefully that person gets their drink in time and, gets their food nice and hot.
Yeah.
And their check when they want it.
Right.
The right way, We hope all that happens.
Yeah.
But when you walk in the door, why not make an impression if you can?
Yeah.
That's what, really I feel like separates the,
the two different types of restaurant people, you know, is how can we get better? How can we be better? How can we improve the experience?
Can I tell you something weird? I divide people into these two categories. Okay. I think there are people who are kind of like, this is who I am. Love me or leave me. And then I think there are people who like think about themselves, try to not in, in huge, drastic, dramatic ways, but who have some self-awareness and try to make little improvements. You know, like the way you make improvements on a house.
On my body. I'm trying to lose weight.
There you go.
You know what I mean? It's all
whatever it is.
Just whatever you can. It's, you can never be stagnant. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'm not trying to sound like an inspirational speaker over here, but
yeah,
you can't be stagnant. You need to always challenge yourself and figure out how to get better, or else what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, I'm happy for the year you're having.
Yeah. I'm ready for next year.
Well, when this interview airs, it'll be closer to next year, but you still got like 4 or 5 months left in this year as we sit here.
I'm actually not in a rush.
Enjoy the moment.
I'm enjoying
it. Enjoy the moment.
I'm ready for the fall. I'm ready to light up my wood ovens in the restaurants and throw some squash into
it.
I love all that. And you know, prosciutto and vino cotto and squash and, you know, roasted chicories and all these great things that are going to be coming around soon. I'm freaking pumped, man. I can't wait to go pumpkin picking and apple picking with my son and come home with way too many apples. I can't wait to wear a friggin' couple of layers. I'm excited. I'm excited for the next couple months.
Yeah.
And today, just the weather alone can just really put you in the right frame of mind.
Yeah,
and
no,
the,
fall
and,
is
and,
in the
and
air.
And the fact that there's no humidity today, I'm ready to freaking jump over buildings.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Great to see you.
Love you, brother.
Thank you.
You're the man.
And that's our show for this week. A huge thank you to our engineers, Matt and Vitor, at Heritage Radio Network, especially as you guys are doing double duty for me through the fall as we get these backlogged episodes up on the air. Thank you to Kat and Katie at Heritage for your help in orchestrating all of that. Thanks to Christian Petroni, my new buddy, for making time during a very busy part of his life when he was rocketing to stardom to sit down and do an interview. Love you, Christian. It was a lot of fun. And Caitlin, I'm off script here. This whole I've thrown the script away. But thank you, Caitlin, for being here.
You're welcome, Andrew.
That's all you're going to say? You said the script was constricting you.
Yeah, but now we're at the end. And I have a train to catch.
You're an enigma. You keep me guessing, Caitlin.
Okay.
You've never lost your mystery. 20 years later, I still don't know what you're going to do next.
Have a great day.
All right. And thanks to all you out in podcast land. We will see you soon on Andrew Talks to Chefs. Okay. You could give me a hard time, but it was better for the script. We did one take.
You should do stupid shit like that, and then we can talk about it.